Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, from the Torres Strait all the way down to the Bass Strait, as far as the west is to the east, I'm Rod Smith, and welcome to our first Awobba Pod podcast for 2021. And to kickstart off Awobba Pod, we went all out. We spared no cost. We had 1,000 shaggy legs happening on both sides while the red carpet was being laid out for our special guest. Had a smoking ceremony so big it nearly burnt down the house. We had 1,000 spears thrown into the air, lit on fire, and when they hit the sky, it spelled sexy. And for the one and only special guest, who some say is the sexiest black man alive, Mr. Stephen, I'm too sexy for my coolerman, Oliver. Good morning, my brother. How are you?
I'm never too sexy for anything, Rod Smith. I'm good, my brother. How are you?
I'm good, good. What was you saying?
I said I'm never too sexy for anything.
Never too sexy.
Now just picture me posing up in a coolerman, like big man-sized bomb.
I could picture that.
Me too.
Now, you and I go a long way back.
We do.
We
a
were
long
just
way
talking,
black.
Talking earlier. It's 25 years.
Yes.
1996, mm-hmm. We went to ACPA, which is the Aboriginal Centre for Performing
Arts. We were back then the Aboriginal Music Theatre Training Program.
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
And then Michael Leslie, the one and only. If you're listening, Michael, what's his favourite saying?
Probably swearing us, running us down, telling us to pull our fingers out.
Drop him.
Drop our forks.
Drop your forks, that's the one.
Yes, and then when he moved to Brisbane,
yeah,
that's when it became ACPA, yeah. But we were among the very first originals.
I think I might have been third year.
You were the
Because you were there
yeah.
the year before, and there was even a year before that.
There was a three-month course in 94.
Yes.
Oh, no, wait there.
Actually, it started, for those who don't know,
yeah.
ACPA, which is up in Brisbane, started way back in Perth, and it started because of the play
Brand New Day.
Brand New Day.
Yeah.
And Michael Leslie was the artistic dance director for it.
He was yeah.
Well,
it was run with Black Swan Theatre Company.
Yeah, that's right.
And
so school,
yeah.
And all the mob was like, well, that was great after the play, because I remember asking Michael and he said, well, let's see if we can keep doing some more. And that's how it started.
Yeah, it started from a 3 month course, then to a 6 month course.
So when I came along it was a full year.
Then a 95 I went to Whopper, then 96. So
one story I always think of is in 96, Michael Jackson was touring Australia.
Yes, he was.
And
history tour.
Where we were based in this old community hall. What's it called? The Rackabye?
The Rackabye Hall.
And it was you had to go up these old staircase, and then there was a hall upstairs. And right underneath was this little bookstore.
Not right, about 20 metres down the road.
Pretty
near
much underneath.
Near the traffic lights there.
It was close enough.
Because I had to run out in the middle of the road.
And then someone comes running in. We're rehearsing for our end of year production.
Ben, our stage.
And he screams,
stage manager.
Michael Jackson's in the bookstore.
Arcane bookstore.
We didn't believe him at first. And he goes, no. How'd he go?
He went, Michael Jackson is in the arcade bookshop. And we all went, words I can't say on here. But we were like, agamon, just in another way. But then he goes, no. Michael Jackson is in the arcade bookshop. And that's when we all screamed and ran out. And Paul and Annie were like, 10 minutes. And yeah, I think I was there for about an hour and a half.
Yeah, we were down there for a while.
When I was shaking, singing out, Michael, I'm Aboriginal, I'll quarry for you.
And you claim that you got to shake his hand.
I will choke you. Yeah, no, well, that's when, like, after him standing there for ages and the security, because remember how they had that big glass door and they gave him and put up that sheet so you couldn't see in?
Yeah.
But then every time you'd see him walk past, and it would be like, ah, and then go quiet. Then he walked past again and then the security came out and they were like, 10 minutes. Oh no, we did 10 minutes. Any report? But he goes, we need you to make a path. He's got to get out, so he's got to move.
I remember that.
Because me, and Michael Jackson, I was like, bush, bush, bush. And so anyway, I got to the front, and then when they came out, and like there was about 200 people there.
Oh, it was pretty.
He shook my hand, Barbara Ball's hand, and my sister Corinne's hand, and then he hopped to the Tarago, and then because it was a red light, and I couldn't help myself. Everyone's on the side of the road, but I ran out in the middle of the street, stood in front of the Tarago, and reckon. And then that's when he waved back at me. And then you trying to bring me down afterwards going, how do you know he waved at you? And then I'm like, because I was in a simple black kid standing in the middle of the road. But then I went, he smiled at me and he waved and everything. And then I went, well, I don't know if he smiled because he had his mask on, but he waved at me.
My only little thing about that story was I wanted to make sure, I knew he'd have to come out. So I was leaning right up against the van. I was in the front row on that Turaga van.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I knew that he's got to slide the door and he'll walk in. But then when that security, yeah, just started pushing us back. And there was a mother and a little boy in front of me. I don't know if you remember. And
that's right,
when
yeah.
they slid the door, like it kind of knocked him and she's screaming. So I went, and so I pushed the door back and the security guy said something. I said, oh, there's a little kid here. I said, you're hitting him with the door. And he said, where is he? And so I picked him up and they took the little kid into Michael Jackson. He got to spend 10 minutes. I should have been there like, because remember it was all joking later. I'm his dad.
You were the big kid. On
so that little kid, I don't know who you are, but you can thank me. Stephen, let's get into this here. Queensland boy.
Yes.
Where are you from originally? And tell me a little bit about your family and your upbringing.
Well, as we say, I'm a Murray from the Curry. So my hometown's Cloncurry. But I grew up in Townsville. Yeah, but if you're speaking about mob, because I'm one of the black fellas who claim everybody. So you got Wanyee and Gungalita, which are neighbouring clans, like up in the Gulf of Carpentaria. Then you got Kokiyalanji, which is the Daintree.
Yep, yep.
Then you got Wapabal, which is Great Keppel Island. And then you got Bundjalung and Biripi, which is obviously down this way, New South Wales.
Oh.
I know, there you go.
Kokiyalanji. I know that one well because of Mr. Grogan, who lives
there. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, they're mob. Yeah, Grogan's yes. a mob. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. So having those different areas and all those different mobs, what was it like as a kid for you growing up?
As a kid growing up?
Oh, and just on that, yeah. and is that, was that experience of moving around and different mob, meeting different mobs, is that what kind of laid the foundations for Stephen Oliver,
for my
the syphilis? Actor?
Well, and I think it's more kind of, well, you know, I was thinking... The other, I think, you know, because I write and all that kind of stuff as well, you know, I was thinking, is it, when you think about it, because, you know, I often find a thing like, I joke around and call myself a black of all trades, mm-hmm. because, you know, I've got to dip my hand in everything, like whether it's writing or,
yep.
you know, playwright poetry or acting or kind of stuff like that. But, you know, the best way I kind of think is like, if you just say performer, really, but I mean, dancing, I was always, you know, and like when I was a kid in Cloncurry, when we would have family barbecues and that, you know, the mob would always get me to dance, like, for the end of town. Like, I remember, I'd be asleep, and then I'd have, like, my grandparents wake me up going, boy, boy, come show these mob how you dance. And so then I'd be out in the backyard in my pajamas dancing up, you know, for mob. But then I'd also be talking to all the mobs, so I kind of got to stay up and, like, talk with the adults and all that kind of stuff as well.
But, you know, I think... a bit like, was it Eddie Murphy, wasn't he... story a bit like that?
Oh, yeah. I know. What he did is about doing stand-up for the mob.
So when they'd say, get up and come and show them the dance, what kind of dance?
Well, it's always Michael. What kind of deadly dancing? What do you expect? That's what I'm making. But, no, you know, when I was thinking about, like, in terms of writing and stuff like that and storytelling, I was thinking, well, when you think about it, and because Cloncurry, you know, with the mob,
yeah.
which I guess is kind of like with blackfellas wherever you go, but, I said, I grew up with mob where we were always telling stories and telling yarns. But then I was listening to, like, Anne Murray, you know, like, you know, the song, like, Could I Have This Dance? Like, because like, that's one of my favourite songs. But I was listening to just the way that song's told and how it's, like, it's storytelling. And I think, well, when you're a black kid and you're growing up with your family and you're always sharing yarns and you're listening to country music, which is some of the greatest storytelling in the world, I think, why should I be so much surprised that I'm a writer? Mm. You know what I mean?
Mm. Mm. Yeah, it's true, because you sit around with a bunch of, well, yeah, with mob, especially if there's a little bit of drinking involved, and the stories come out left, right, and center.
Left, right, and center. And they're always, like, how many, you know, like, that thing where, like, mob are going, like, tell a yarn there. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, it's always about yarning and stuff.
Or tell that story of last week. Yeah,
talk about that time.
So, how did you get into the arts, and when did you realise, was there a certain point or an age when you went, yeah, this is what I want to do?
I think it was when I went to Perth, really. Kind of, because I mean, what, you know, kind of growing up and back then in those days, and I, you know, I think it comes back down to, like, so often you hear today, it sounds a bit cliche, the amount of times people say, like, you can't be what you can't see, kind of thing. And, like, I'd always loved dancing and performing and stuff like that, but that wasn't really something black kids did, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I was even talking
unless
to...
Unless it was traditional.
Okay.
Unless it was traditional.
Unless it was traditional, then.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, I was talking to Trisha Morton Thomas, and we were talking about, you know, because me and her were having a conversation. We were talking about all these actors, and we're going, oh, do you know this one? Do you know this one? And we're like, oh, no, no, no. And I said, you know what's really lovely? I said, we're now at a point where we have enough actors and stuff like that, and mob and performers and stuff, where we don't know everybody. Because back in the day, you know what I mean? Like, it was very, you know, just a small, everyone kind of knew everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
But what was your question again? I got straight from that.
What age?
Oh, Well, now when I went, I think when I went to Perth. But I mean, that being said, I'd always did poetry. I'd always danced. Like I was even, you know, part of a dance troupe in Townsville. Yeah. I was called the Footio Ginger Stars on stage. But it was like a young talent time kind of thing. But even then, that wasn't in career wise. That wasn't something I thought I could do as a career. But I think when it was kind of when I went to Perth and that's when it kind of became clear to me that it could be a path.
Yeah. Okay. I completely understand what you're saying because at the age of 12 I started traditional dancing, you know, and all that, and just performing, and then one thing leads to another, and I don't know. Yeah, it just ended up getting bigger and bigger.
It did. Yeah. Well, it was. And it was that kind of path. You go on, but it's all that interconnectedness of, like, you know, whether it's traditional or whether it's me writing a play,
yeah,
it's still storytelling.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And you know, then that's what I think about. You know, but I often talk about too. If you look at our mob with music, because I'm going through this thing now with music where it's become, you know, music has always been a part of my life. Like me being 5 years old dancing for the family, like music has something that's always been there. And it was weird because a couple of years ago I found myself missing music. And I kind of went, you know, I asked myself, what is that about? Because I was surrounded by music. I was constantly listening to, you know what I mean? Like, you watch an ad, there's jingles and all that kind of stuff. So how is it, why am I missing music? But I kind of realized it was me missing my own music. You know, that kind of, that the song within. Because even if you look at our mob, music was always, it wasn't about getting a number one hit. It wasn't about starting up on a dance floor. It was about teaching you identity.
Yeah.
It was about teaching you purpose. You know, this is who you are. This is what you do. This is what you know. You know what I mean? This is what is right. This is what is wrong. And that's the way we, you know, we use music. And I even think about now, like, you know, because black fellas, we go to so many funerals. And, you know, it's obviously like, you always play the Bob, you know, person's favorite song. But I think that's a universal thing. I think so many people do that. You know what I mean? There's always music. And when you think about black fellas, we kind of lost that thing, like, you know, we have music when people are leaving this world, but we don't have music anymore when people are coming into the world. Mm. Whereas when we used to back in the day, you know what I mean? We'd have naming ceremonies and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, so you know, I've just been kind of thinking about this thing about music and how, you know, the way we listen to music and it carries us through hard times.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, music is a very, and I think we've kind of, you know, lost the sacredness in that kind of way because we have kind of turned it into like a commodity or career kind of thing, where I think, you know, we can go back to that deeper thing of what is our own relationship with music? What does music mean to us?
That was a good point there about coming into the world. There would have been singing and songs.
Exactly,
like,
there was a song.
Because now it's just
Now it's about blue and pink. You know what I mean?
and bus and balloons.
I see these gender reveal parties where people are having fireworks, like blue fireworks, and I'm like, what? Like,
I know,
oh my god,
I know.
And like the kid got to remember that.
Yeah.
The kid still in the belly won't even see it.
I think you pretty much answered the next question. I was going to say, like, writing plays and scripts and TV and music and poems, like, where do your ideas and inspirations come from? I suppose you pretty much nearly explained that. It's just you growing up and all that.
It is. Well, mob. Like, it's, you know, I was saying, there was a point that I was saying, like, I was kind of getting worried for myself, like, in a sense, getting older, because I think, you know, the world, I was allowing it to make me more cynical, because funny when you talk about inspiration, but I remember when I was going to uni and Marcel, do you remember Marcel, acting teacher?
Yes,
So Marcel asked the question, she goes, how often do you fall in love, you know, in a week? And I knew straight away what she meant. And a lot of people were kind of thinking about relationship wise, but I was the kind of person, if I saw a flower and just this beautiful flower, you know, I'd fall in love with that moment. Or if you see a parent with a child and them having a laugh or something, you know what I mean? Like, and there was all these little things, but life, you know, I think, and especially with mob, like, there's so many stories with mob, you know what I mean? So inspiration, I think, came very easily when, you know, when you can't, like, and because I love Mob, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's like when people ask me, like, who do you think, you know, you know, like, who makes you laugh? And I was like, well, just, I said, if I see black fellas on TV, like, I remember this, well, I was watching the news once, and it's about a crocodile attack that happened up in the NT. And what had happened is that that crocodile actually went into the tent and grabbed Auntie and was pulling her down to the river. And no good man, you know, jumped atop the crocodile, poked it inside, and let her go. But how they interview an auntie now at the front of the hospital, and she said, I'm a wheelchair, got that bandaged up leg, but how she's smoking, all. And an expert at that interview, a record tour. So how do you see your husband? Do you see him as a hero? And Auntie reckon, and not just him, I was fighting it too.
Yeah.
So, Mob, you know what I mean? Like, so I think inspiration's everywhere. You know, when you kind of have those moments, and when you, love life, I guess.
Yeah.
Well,
I was talking to you earlier. Is there a topic out there that you think could be a little bit controversial, but you're like, ooh, I'd like to write a play, whether it's a song or a poem, and, you know, but it's one of those topics, you know, probably going to stir something up. Or you?
No, well, I mean,
I guess.
Well, like, I think because I think that, like, there's places I'll go and there's places I won't go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so I don't know whether about being. But it's funny. Like, if there's one thing that I find that I never ever thought as being controversial. But then people have made comments afterwards. But it's sexuality, me with my sexuality, about being a gay man. Because I've seen, you know, when my bad comments, like, I remember one comment on our black comedy about the titters. And one fellow commented about, he's pushing the gay agenda. You know, he's killing culture. And so anyway, I Doris Dunkle. And next minute, I saw the, you know, rap song where he charged it up on VB, and can I say a mild swear word? But he, you know, he's rapping and he's singing about his ex-woman and, like, you know, bitches and bitch and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt like showing, you know, when you send I'm kind of culture, and it's like, if you want to rap in that, yeah, that's kind of stuff. But I said, but here's a video of me doing Shake a Leg with my nephews.
Yeah.
I said, now with your video, I can guarantee you that we didn't have alcohol. And we certainly didn't have bitches in our culture.
Yeah.
So if you want to talk about who's killing culture.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so I find that people have found that contrary. But it's like, you know, when people, like, and even when I did a performance once at NAIDOC, and because one of the, but it was interesting when I look back at the performance and the way I did the things, but because I spoke about gay stuff in there, where I did one of my songs, but, you know, people made the comment, oh, it was brave. And I was thinking, and I find that strange, because if someone was to just sing about, you know, their relationship up on stage, like, it wouldn't be labeled brave, but because it's me singing about another man, it gets, you know what I mean? So, but that's never been a big, you know what I mean? Like, a thing to me, like, I don't get why that should be,
No, I understand what you're saying. It should be, it's like if, I remember someone saying, you know, when you see those videos and there's a homeless person on the street and someone's going up and doing a good deed, and I remember this guy gone and they said, why are we calling that a good deed? Why can't that be a normal, you know? And I went, stuff, yeah. Like, you know, like, why do we have to go and, why do we go and help the homeless and call it special? You know, why aren't we just out there doing that every day where it becomes normal? You know, and I suppose that's the.
You know, and that's what I, you know, with this one uncle that, you know, years ago at Brisbane at the central Brisbane train station, you know, because I was walking along and uncle, he was looking for, he's like looking, picking up cigarette butts and stuff like that. And you know, and being an ex-smoker, I kind of remember that thing of like how horrible that felt. And I questioned for a moment, like, oh, should I buy uncle a pack of it? Then I went, no, you know, leave him, like, thing. But then anyway, he asked me for a cigarette and I said, oh, no, sorry, brother, I don't smoke. And he goes, could you buy me something to eat? I haven't eaten in 4 days. And you could see, like, uncle was gone. I try not to get thing when I talk about the story, but, you know, because I said, yeah, you're right. I said, well, what do you want? I said, Mac is up here. And the look of shock on his face that someone would buy him a feed because he was starving.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'll never forget that look on his face. Yeah. And I think, how sad is it that we live in a world where someone who hasn't eaten in days would be that shocked? And so, And that look told me that he had been told numerous times no.
No.
You know what I mean? So
No, completely understand you. Look, with more exposure with your career, there's the highs and the lows.
Yep.
How do you handle the popularity and the criticism?
Criticism I don't mind. You know, it depends on how it's done. But I think sometimes criticism is good. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of good to self-reflect. I don't think the world self-reflects enough. We don't kind of... We get too defensive sometimes nowadays. We kind of... We could take a step back and go, oh, maybe, okay, yeah. Why? You know what I mean? Like, kind of question why they're criticizing that.
Yeah.
Kind of question why you're asking that. What I don't think, like... Well, negativity is a different thing. So, like, if I find people on my Facebook page where they make jokes about my sexuality... Like, I just blocked two fellas now where someone's going, oh, you want him? Do you know that kind of crap? You know what I mean? It's like, this is my page. You don't come on here doing that, my page, bitch. Bye. You know what I mean? So blocked. So, you know, get that negativity kind of stuff out of my life. With the exposure, you know what I mean? I found that very hard at first. And that's because, you know, I think we live in a world where people were associating me, like, you know, especially with the titter stuff, because that stuff just, that took off, like, and... It was so fast, it's so rapid. And people associated me with making them feel good. And when people do that, they want more. And they're like, you know, make me laugh. I'd be at funerals, you know, mourning mob. And people are like, oh, you know, we'll make us laugh now. And it's like, well, I'm here mourning too. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's that kind of stuff. Well, then you have people like, you know, and the way, and it took me years to this, because, you know, I was people, and the reason why I found it so hard is because I was such a people pleaser.
Yeah.
I was, like, you know what I mean? Like, I found it hard to say no to people. But then I got to that point where it was just like, it was take, take, take. And I'm like, I have nothing left to give you, people. Like, I can't give you any more. You've taken, like, you know, and it was that kind of point where I got so depressed about it. I was saying to people when I walked, I said, the only way I could describe it, I said, when I there was such a heaviness when I walked. It was like this shell was in the front, but the spirit of me was behind me.
Yeah.
And I was dragging it along. And it was like it was saying to me, don't let me go. You know what I mean? Because if I let it go, that would have been... You know what I mean? Oh, that's how that's how bad it was getting. And, you know, there was parts where I would find myself... And because a lot of the stuff that happened to me being exploited and stuff like that, I was in my room. I'd just lock myself away in my house.
Yeah.
And I'd be in my room just laying there crying. And then, you know, one day I had, like, friends of mine turn up and they were banging on the door because they were just that worried for me. And that I think that was kind of the beginning of the change where I went, why am I sitting around crying over people who took advantage of me or take advantage of me?
Yeah.
And ignoring the people who care about me and actually come around to my house looking for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It kind of got to that point. And so that was the thing now too where I realized it's okay to say no.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then if people are going to be rude too, when they just come up demanding me to do stuff, well, if you're going to be rude to me, then expect me to be rude back. And having to make peace with that, because I don't like being rude, you know what I mean? I didn't like making people feel thing. And even now, sometimes I'll feel bad, you know what I mean? Like, after that, I'll think about it. And it's like, no, like, you react in a way that was, you know...
Yeah, and that's...
They invaded
and people have got to learn a time and place.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, there's still a lot of people out there. I remember you telling me a story where I think you were eating breakfast and people had just come up and taken photos.
That was at Hungry Jack's. I was at Hungry Jack's in Sydney.
You know, and you're like,
Well, she came up and asked for a photo. And I said, yeah, you know, you are. So I got a photo with her. And then I'm sitting there with my cousin. She goes, actually, can I make a video of us? And she went, you know what? I don't care what you say. I'm just going to film us. And then just started filming and just sitting there making all this while I'm trying to eat with my cousin. And I was just kind of like...
Yeah.
And I wish I'd learned to be a bit more rude then.
Yeah. Now, you touched on it a bit there earlier, so, yeah, it is no secret that you are an open gay Aboriginal man.
What do you mean by open?
But I was talking to you earlier, like, do you see... this is a two-part question. So, the original question is, was it hard for you to open up coming from a small community, you know, that I'm sure is culturally strong with family and mob? But before that, are you a gay Aboriginal man, or are you a Aboriginal gay man, or are you a man that's Aboriginal gay, or are you a man that's... You know what I mean?
Mm.
How do you see yourself?
That is such a... I'll put it this way. I was black before I was gay.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. In terms of being a man, I think that's still something else society needs to have discussions about in such a big way. I think there's so much confusion about what makes a man nowadays, where we talk about, because I said, if you look at it, we live in a society where we're teaching young boys, if you get laid, when you get a license, when you get into a fight, when you get a job, when you get your first car, these all kind of stuff to be in a man. We're telling them that when you get.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not teaching young men about when you provide.
Yeah.
You know, when you make someone feel safe instead of scared.
Yeah.
You know, we don't talk about that kind of stuff. So, you know, there's often things where I often grapple with the fact about this identity thing around of being a man and what exactly is manhood. Because when you think about it, with our mob, you had a very clear, cut and clear thing about when you became a man. You know what I mean? And now there's this kind of thing of we've even lost that.
Mm.
And it's kind of like, well, how do we get to that part? And when do we, because we've got so many young fellas out in the world now who have this idea about, oh yeah, I remember having a toy, he got upset. He felt his manhood was being attacked because Kleenex decided to stop putting on man-sized tissues. And I was kind of like, well, if you're upset because you need tissues to a size of a tissue to tell you that you're a man, I can't help you with that. You know what I mean? But it's because we, like, if you look at it, we say burgers, it's a man-sized meal.
Yeah.
So we're
yeah.
sending all these messages about what being a man is. Get this car, it makes you a man.
Yeah.
So, yeah, am I male? I'd see myself as male. Man, that's a big, deep discussion there. Deep probably isn't the word I should use, but... but you know what I mean.
Yes. So what are you saying? You're a Aboriginal first?
Yeah, well, that's something always been... And, you know, but that even comes back to, like, yeah, you're going to get in deep stuff here, but, you know, it's often when I talk about... It's a way, you know, I always find this a way about how I find it interesting when people get upset about, you know, people use the, like, you know, African Americans using the N-word and stuff like that. And I say, yeah, but it's like I said, if you look at us, like with us black fellas, I said, you know, I'm very, because I remember, like, even from growing up, you black kids, or you know, like our family, yeah. You black kids better get out of the rain, you black kids, you black kids better put on shoes, like all this kind of stuff, you know what I mean? So you're told you're black, right?
Yeah.
But that obviously come from our pit, because, you know, black never existed in this country before colonization. You know what I mean? Like, black fella, like, that was, so, there was a thing fellas? Of where just our mob were always told you blacks, you yeah. blacks, you blacks, yeah. you blacks.
Yeah.
And that's why we to each other talk about, oh, you big black pork, or you big black, you know what I mean? That's why you find it with that, because we were constantly told we were black.
Yeah.
So that's kind of something. But then in a way too, that kind of, you know, cemented an identity as well within us.
Yeah.
Mm.
Never thought about that. That's true.
But there you go. I think about a lot of things besides man.
So at what age, or as I said, for coming out, and was it hard for you? Was there a...
Well, you know, and And you know what? I would have only came out the year before I met you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was because Mum and Corinne were coming to Perth. And because I was out in Perth, you know, with Charlie and all them mob. Like all the Noongar mob there, you know. All them mad mob who I love and adore. But I'd go home to Townsville, and then I'd be back in the closet there. So then when Mum and Corinne were coming over, it was kind of like, well, you know, I didn't want to be walking down the street with Mum and Corinne. And then... I'd have Charlie and the mob come up. Hey, who was that man you were chucking your fork around with? You know. And so I thought, okay, I've got to tell him. And the funny thing was, remember Melissa Etheridge?
The singer,
yeah. So I was reading an article, in an interview in the gay papers I used to have there in Perth. But she said the line, she said, if people aren't there for you afterwards, they were never there for you in the first place.
Oh, yeah.
And then I thought about my family, and I knew straight away, I thought, no, my family would be. I knew my family. You know what I mean? Like, I knew they wouldn't abandon me. Didn't make it easier.
Yeah.
You know, it was still hard. Like, because it ended up being a 4-page letter. Because I thought, if I'm going to tell Mum I'm gay, what am I going to say? So I started writing down these things. It turned into a 4-page letter. Remember how we had a mailbox just down from Matheson Road? House there?
Yep.
And it was like midnight. I went down, I put it in that mailbox. Yeah, because we didn't have internet back in those days. But seriously, and I lay there like till about 3 o'clock in the morning thinking, what have I done? Like, oh my God, I'm gonna tell the family. I thought about running back down to the mailbox, putting petrol and chucking the match and setting it all on fire. But I thought, no, she needs to know. And then, you know, and back in those days, it took 4 days for mail to get from Perth to Townsville. And I was ringing up mum all the time in between. And, you know, just like, oh, da-da-da, I love you, blah, blah. And she finally went, what's up with you? And I said, what do you mean? She goes, something's bothering you. Like, what's wrong? And I said, well, I've sent you a letter about it. I said, you know, you'll know when you get it. She went, okay. And then she rang me when she finally, she goes, I got your letter. And I said, and how are you? She goes, you're my son and I love you. And mum took it up on herself. Like, and it was, you know, that's also the thing about mum, that protective thing too, is like she then told everyone else within the family.
Yeah.
And it was kind of mum's way of saying, you know, if you have a problem with Stephen, then you're going to have a problem with me. Well, you know what I mean? Yeah. It was that kind of stuff. But all my family, you know, were very solid about it. Like even Auntie Charmaine, I remember, you know, ringing her up from a phone booth and then going, you know, the money was getting in. And I said, Auntie Charmaine, the money's nearly out, I got to go. And she went, oh, just before you go, boy, she said, I just want you to know we know. And I said, Auntie Charmaine, I said, you don't know what a weight off my shoulders that is. And she said, yeah, when your mum told us, she said, you know, we all cried. She said, but we didn't cry because you're gay. She said, we cried because, she goes, but we cried because you thought you had to hide it from us and what you must have been going through.
Mm.
So, you know, and that's what I mean. Like, my family were deadly and stuff like that. I mean, I did have but when I was doing black comedy, before filming that, I knew I was literally going to be coming out to hundreds of thousands of people. And, you know, and I kind of went through this thing of like, because I thought, okay, is that going to open me up to more homophobia? You know, is that going to be more abuse on the street? Because, you know, I've had people like sing out stuff on the side of the road and that kind of stuff. You know, but then I thought about my nieces and nephews, and I thought about them in school, and are they going to get teased for having a gay uncle and all that kind of stuff? And I thought, no, well, that's why I need to do it though. Yeah. Because if I act like there's something wrong with that, and there's something to be ashamed about, then I'm basically saying there is. You know what I mean? Like, kind of way. Yep. So, no, I need to go and not, you know, and when you look, the titties was the biggest thing to come out of black comedy. You know what I mean? Like, and the amount of like the love and that I've gotten from people.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's when strangers come and call me the S word and kind of stuff like that. But then when you look, my old high school, where most of my nieces and nephews, you know, went to, they asked me to be the guest speaker at the graduation.
Oh, okay.
So, you know what I mean? So, yeah. And, you know, that was the thing about it. It's amazing, this thing about when you give people a chance, you know what I mean? Because you're always kind of fed this kind of narrative.
Hmm.
But, it's been awesome.
As we were talking about earlier, in 96, when we first met, and coming from Newcastle and going to Perth, having any gay Aboriginal people in our community at that time was pretty much non-existent.
Mm.
I think I knew one fella, but then they moved to Sydney and was living in Sydney.
Yep.
And so I remember telling you later in that year, you know, I said, oh, do you know, you're the first gay person I ever met.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, because we played pool that first time. Yeah,
and we flogged
you and Toby. Toby was the biggest queen. But, and I remember just being really paranoid and, like, scared. And I was like, oh, you know. Because, as I said, my only things I knew at that time, you know, was probably just what you heard in talk or on TV.
Yeah.
You know, but as we got to know each other, I mean, by the end of the year, you know, you're one of my best mates.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we're writing songs and stuff and things together. So, yeah, I always remember that. But,
I remember though too, like thinking like, or when you told me like you were paranoid and you were like, scared of that. And I'm thinking, look at my size next to you.
And I know.
But that's the thing of like where we get kind of taught this thing. And it's that thing about, and you know, whether it's, you know, whether it's someone's religion or someone's sexuality or someone's race, and we're so often taught this thing about the other, and fear is such a it's a tool that's used in such a powerful way, you know what I mean? And I've heard a saying that I love. It's like when fear is used to divide people will jump on a bandwagon and not even look to see who's driving. Yes. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and that's the kind of, and we often find, and it's because, and it's, I guess it's like anything, like when you watch a horror movie, for example, you know what I mean? Like, or when you read a book, like things are always going to be worse in your mind.
Yeah.
And it's when we actually talk, we have those discussions and we think, and then we see, you know what I mean? Like that's when we get that understand. And there's a saying I love where, you know, it's like talking, you know, it's the same with, and I apply this to like things with mental health as well. You know, whenever people, like, when you're going through those low points and you're thinking stuff in your head, it's always good to talk, because talking is what organizes our thoughts.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Sometimes when we hear stuff in our head, we justify that stuff, but when we speak it out loud and we actually hear those words said, we kind of go, wow, I can't believe I was thinking that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Oh, look, you see it every day on Facebook. I mean, there's topics or issues coming up and people jumping on the bandwagon. And there's been times when I've known both sides of the story. You know, especially with Melbourne, they're like, oh yeah, you wait till I see this person. And I'm like, oh man, if you only knew the other side of the story. But yeah. And then once that's you get cool. to know, yeah, or you know, as our situation, you know, and as I said, by the end of the year, once I got to know, I just went, in my head, I was like, he's no different to anyone else, you know.
And now 25 years later.
Yeah. I'm still paranoid of you.
You should be.
So with all your experience, and as you said, like with what happened to you, with your parent, with your mum coming out, also with black comedy and the titters sketches, if someone, a young person now, or maybe not even young, and they're in that same situation of thinking that they want to come out, but they're afraid, what would you say to that person?
Well, the thing I always say, you know what I mean, like, we live in a world, and this is what, you know, and I think the thing about what causes people to be in the closet is because you're often made to feel ashamed about it.
Yeah.
To not like yourself, that there's something wrong with you.
Mm.
And then when you hear that stuff, it does, it reverts you, because for me, life is about connecting.
Yeah.
You know, inevitably, it's all about connection. How we connect to ourselves, how we connect to each other, how we connect to, you know, the greater world. So then when you hear these things that there's, like, as if there's something wrong with you and you revert something back into yourself, you do become disconnected.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to be rejected.
Mm.
You know what I mean? You're scared. Yeah. There's, you know, and that was the scariest thing for me, was like the people I love rejecting me.
Yeah.
That's what we're, you know. But at the end, and I realize I'm foot, because I, you know, we sadly live in a world today where we still need organizations that house gay youth because their families kick them out. You know what I mean? And it, you know, and if people are, you know, when I say that, you know, who, if they find themselves in that situation, and it's so hard when you're young, you know what I mean? Because you just, there is a kind of thing about hopelessness, but you do find a family, you know. And I think that's what kind of helped me come out, is that when I was over in Perth, I did find another family.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And it was a family who helped me love myself. You know what I mean? Like, he helped me to love that side of me. And then I realized, you know, it's like when if people are trying to make you feel ashamed or make you feel you have, you know, to not be proud of yourself in any way, then they're the people who need to be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah.
They're the people who are going around spreading this, all this negativity, all this hateful stuff, all this fear-mongering. That's something to be ashamed of. When you're that kind of person that is doing that and causing divisiveness and disconnectedness, that is something to be ashamed about.
Yeah.
Don't be ashamed of yourself. Love yourself because you are beautiful.
Yeah.
You know? Get off, start singing Christina Aguilera soon.
I think it goes back to that saying you said earlier, if they don't love me...
If they were never there for you... If they're not there for you afterwards, they were never there for you in the first place.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes people will take time to come around.
Yeah.
To, you know what I mean? Like, some people... Because unfortunately, some people will make something about themselves. You know, there's a saying I love where, you know, having a queer child doesn't mean you failed as a parent. Not loving them does.
Mm. Yes, that is true. That is true. All right, we only got a couple of questions to go.
Yeah. Yeah, that just reminded me of that choreography thing you played. What was his name?
Oh, Hands and Feet. We won't talk about it.
We won't talk about it.
Okay. I know you've done a lot of things in your career.
Yeah.
From writing, performing,
yep.
singing. Top three things, if you can, if it's possible, that you're probably, on the career side of things, that you're most proud of.
Well, probably the high school, going back to my old high school.
Yeah.
That was a moment for me. That I've had a play tour of the Cape York. So, like, 5,000 black kids in remote communities got to see that play. I'm very proud of that. And the third thing, my sexiness.
Of course.
Well, being, had... being a black fellow and being a gay black fellow.
Yeah.
I think, you know, is because, you know, it's funny when people, I had someone try to talk to me about how, you know, I'm not saying Townsville does have its issues and stuff like that surrounding racism and homophobia. And someone was saying that to me, like, how can you love that place? And I said, well, you know, it's home. And I said, and you might, yeah, there is issues and stuff like that. But if you look at it, people say how racist, homophobic it is. But one of the biggest people to come out of it is a gay black man.
You know what I came across about a couple of months ago was, what was that play you wrote where you got me to come and workshop up in Cairns?
Oh, Proper Solid.
Yeah. I found the video of it, and so I downloaded it.
Oh, did you?
It's not of the whole. Someone did a little doco of that whole.
Ah, oh, did they?
Yeah.
I should have thought to bring it down. I've actually got a thing of it, but that's the play now that.
Oh, is that the one?
Yeah, So they went around to all the kids like in the school and stuff like that, and they were like doing workshops of that and getting all these black kids up acting and stuff like that, and that's what I love about it. Like,
So just on that, any black or white young people or people thinking of getting into the arts, the world of the arts.
Yeah.
What advice would you give them?
I think you got to do it because you love it.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people do it because they're chasing fame or stuff, or they're seeking validation, which I think I still do in a lot of ways. Probably was such a people pleaser. I think that's the thing. Like, when we talk about the arts, but I think everyone, because we talk about it in such a career sense, but I think everybody is creative.
Yeah.
I think everyone is creative. And that's what I talk about music before. No matter who you are, we all have a relationship with music. And, you know, the thing I would say about, look, if you want to get into the arts and it's something that you love, you know, because I hate this thing about we talk about making it. And, you know, there's a lot of gatekeepers and all that kind of stuff out there. And there's a lot of, you know, people who will put value. It's funny how we put value on something, you know what I mean? We put this monetary value, like, kind of on stuff. And stuff. But at the end of the day, I say, whoever you are, always be creative. Because I say, look, I think when you're being creative, when you're touching that creative side, that will bring you closer to creation, whatever that may be for you. And that's what I think everybody should at least get into the arts in some small way.
Always, you say, have a backup plan.
Oh, yeah, you knew that.
The highs and lows of the arts world.
Well, I was going to be a model if I didn't make it in the arts. So.
Yes, I'm sure you would have made it. Mr. Stephen Oliver, it is a pleasure. It's always great to catch up with you.
You too,
every year or two, we seem to cross paths. Thank you for being our first edition for 2021 on a Wobble Pod. And yes, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, my brother. You too. You big black fool.